Welcome back to the Behind the Play podcast. I am joined by the host of the Coming In Hot podcast and someone I watched as a kid. So this is pretty cool for me. I know you probably didn't want to hear that, Brent, but the one and only Brent Wallace. Thanks so much for taking the time and coming on.
Thanks. No, I was just after having my afternoon nap, but I got up for you. That's what us old people do.
Yeah, I don't know if it was worth it. I don't know. I think you're probably regretting it already, but I'm curious, just for someone who's been in the game as a journalist for a long time, maybe talk to us a little bit about your story and what made you want to go into this crazy life.
It's my mom's fault, to put it to
Oh.
you the easiest way. So, okay, let me try to make this easy. When I was in high school, I played basketball, but I wasn't very good. I played on like the grade 10 team. We had three basketball teams. I went to the largest high school in Canada at the time, Fredericton High, which people are like, no, you didn't. But we had over 3,000 students back in
Oh.
1991, and that's just grade 10 to 10 to 12. So, long story short, I'm playing basketball. They tell me the next year I'm not good enough to play anymore. And so Rogers Cable, basically the equivalent Fundy Cable, was always broadcast the games. And I'd always talk to the guy who always did play by play. And he's like, well, why don't you join me and we'll do color? I'm like, okay. So for like 2 years, I did that while I was in high school and then went to university at UNB for a semester. But then I opened my own sports clothing store at the same time. And I was like, I'd rather do this. And then I didn't really focus on my studies. So the UNB said, please don't ever come back here. They sent me a nice letter. And so I was looking for something to do. And back in the day, the newspaper classifieds, there was an ad for a broadcasting school in Halifax, which was run by Alex J. Walling, who was the TSN reporter in Halifax at the time. My mom says, like, go do that. And I'm like, okay. So I went to this broadcasting school and then Alex and I got along extremely well, and he said, "What do you want to do when you grow up?" And I said, "I want to be you, at TSN." And so he had helped me out quite a bit, got me an internship, ended up getting hired at the local TV station, which was ended up becoming Global in Halifax, and then from there I went to Global in Montreal in 1997, as they launched a new TV station, and then 11 months later I was in Ottawa for TSN as one night after an Expos game. This is how old I am. The Expos were playing. Michael Whalen, who was the TSN reporter in Montreal, goes, Brent, there's an opening in Ottawa. I've already talked to them. You call them tomorrow morning. Here's the guy's name and number. And I called him, and then 2 weeks later, I was hired in Ottawa. And so I've been here since '98 covering this ends.
When you came to Ottawa, I'm just curious, like, were you a hockey guy at that time? Like, did you grow up or had you been doing play, like, when you're talking about the play-by-play, like, were you in that world a bit or?
No, so once I was in high school, I didn't, except for a little bit of university, I didn't carry on with the color stuff. I wasn't very good, Alex. But I became a reporter, and then I covered hockey. Like I covered the Halifax Mooseheads' first ever season, and the Toronto Raptors' first ever exhibition game was in Halifax. I did that.
Really?
Sean Bradley, here's a trivia question: Sean Bradley and oh, Tractor Trailer, I think that was his from Michigan, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, was
Fouled
the
out of that game for
Mavs?
like getting into a fight.
Is that
What
the
was his name?
Mavs? Were they on the Mavs?
No,
Tractor Trailer.
76ers.
Sorry.
76ers Raptors.
Oh,
I
I
still
can
have
Google this, but we
the
won't do
press
it. Yeah.
pass somewhere. Anyway,
Cool.
so then I covered when I went to Montreal, I covered the Habs that year. They had made the second round of the playoffs, and then in fact, I covered Matthew Darche, who's now the Islanders GM, as he
Really?
played for the McGill Redmen. So him and I have had a relationship ever since. And there's been a few others along the way, but I covered hockey and stuff throughout university and then the Habs.
I guess, when you went to TSN, and obviously that was kind of when the Sens were coming up, throughout their, was it 11 straight playoff appearances, something like that. How cool was it for you just to be like a young guy covering this team with all this energy and just being around Ottawa and getting to like, just be around the rink
So
with everything going on?
you know it's funny, like I didn't know any better, right? Like
Really?
if you're just yeah, because I didn't go through any of the growing pains of the really terrible Sens seasons for the first 5 years. I had just joined the team after they had finished going into round two, I think it was, against Washington.
Yeah.
I've only missed, I think, their first two playoff series or first three playoff series of games. But like Rick Dudley had just become GM. Pierre Gauthier was gone. It was just like, that's just who I covered. I didn't know any better. So when you're covering all those teams, you're like, oh, yeah, this is the National Hockey League. Like, players are really good and whatever. And you get into like 99. So my next year, 99, 2000, they had a really good team. But 02, 03, you're like, they could win a Stanley Cup here. I remember my bosses calling me going, this is the year for the Sens. And I'm like, we'll see. They win the President's Trophy. We're in Buffalo celebrating that. And no, sorry, that was the Prince of Wales. We were in Buffalo. That was 6-07. Never mind. They all blend together at some point, Alex. You'll learn this as you get older. The like 02, 03 was like, yeah, that one was really, I knew that was different. And then 05, 06, and then the Spezza, Heatley, Alfredson era was special. But when you're in it, you're just like, you're covering it because it's daily. So you can't appreciate all the time of how good it is. Go through the 2012 to 17 era, and you're like, oh, that's, yeah, that was really special. And I don't know when the next time is. Maybe it's coming up again that we'll see it in Ottawa. Maybe. But that string of 99 to 08, 09-ish was a run. That was an amazing time.
For
Like,
you
but
as
don't forget, by the way, Alex, in that time, the team is bankrupt, right? They're
I
going through a
know.
new own. Like, there's all kinds of stuff going on around it. So you don't really know. Like, you still think that this is a small market team. You're like, well, what the hell is it? Like, Buffalo is bankrupt at the same time, and they're really competitive. So it's a whole lot of different stuff going on.
When you look back at that time, is there something that you would tell, whatever age Brent, like, hey, you should really do this in your career as a broadcaster or anything, like you look back and be like, yeah, I should have done that, or anything that maybe you would a piece of
Good
advice.
question. I'd like to be a better writer.
Oh, why is that?
Just when someone's really good at writing and they only have a minute and a half or 2 minutes to tell a story, it becomes a massive, massive difference maker. So, Alex, one of the things Alex told me that I've never forgotten was every word matters when you only have very few. Like, I don't, not to disparage newspapers, but when you write 1,500 to 2,000 words, you can have a throwaway line. You can easily, whatever. But when you've got 190 seconds to 100 seconds to try and tell a story, every word matters. And so I wish my vocabulary was bigger. At the same time, they always tell you to dumb it down. Dumb down every story so everybody understand what you're talking about. So that's the issue I always battled.
That's interesting, because when I started this podcast, I had James Duffley on, and he told me the same thing. Like, if you become a really good writer, that'll really help your broadcasting. I'm like, what do you mean by that? Like, you're talking, but it makes now being around people like you and Kyle, and like you kind of see, like, yeah, writing's kind of important. So
Yeah.
that's
And I'm a
interesting.
terrible writer. They've asked me to write books, and I'm like, you don't want me to, because I don't know what a dangling participle is. So
That should be
yeah, I was.
the name of your next episode.
Don't tell Yorkie, because that'll be all that it is. But I would, yeah, if I could write, there have been some books that I was asked to write a John Muckler book a long, long time ago,
Really?
and I was like, I don't think I can do it justice. And then I was just recently asked to do a couple, and I'm like, I'll find you a writer, but it's not me.
I feel like a Muckler's book would have been interesting, to say the least, but
The one thing that bugs me about John Muckler's legacy in Ottawa is that people don't give him the respect. They chanted it like, oh, he traded for Tyler Arneson. Okay. We could go through a lot of GMs who have made some really terrible decisions. I get that. But he gave you four 100-point seasons, a President's Trophy, and a trip to the Stanley Cup final. Like, what more do you want? And he's the only guy that's delivered that. And yet everybody's like, oh, he was never a. He was the best GM Ottawa's had, and I will argue that to this day. I know
Of
he traded
course.
Marian Hossa. The team also didn't
Sure.
have $6 million to give to Marian Hossa. So they trade Hossa, which without question is a great player. It brings you back Danny Heatley, is the
Who's
only
great?
50 goals, two-time 50-goal scorer on the team. ends up taking you to a cup final and saved you $2.5 million on a cash team, and people still want to. I'm like, guys, we got to sometimes give John Mucklow a little bit more respect.
It's 07. Yeah.
And we all forget about the stuff he did with the Oilers. Like, he was really good. And I just think he deserves a better nod.
I don't know if it's the same thing for you because you're probably in Buffalo, but I remember being a kid and like that Alfie goal and just seeing Muckler's reaction, and it's like this like euphoric, like, and I just think of that team and Murray and everyone. Yeah, it's crazy.
That was by far the best time to be around, and there was so much off ice stuff going on at the same time. It was just, you're like, holy, like, I don't know how, as long as you win, no one pays attention to all the stuff going on off the ice, but it was wild.
We'll get to the off the ice stuff maybe a bit later in the story. I'm kind of curious for you, like maybe sticking on the journalism theme a little bit. Like, it's hard to interview athletes as someone like as you would know, and I would know to maybe a bit lesser of an extent. What's your maybe process of trying to kind of ease them in to get them to kind of go where you want? Like, how do you try to approach that with players?
So two things. One, pro athletes, because I want to make a difference, because covering
Okay.
amateur athletes is a whole
Very
different
different.
world, because they
Yeah.
just want to talk and they will give you honest answers, and the emotion is everything. Like, it's not about money. It's not about trying to protect their bank account and their image. That was my, so one of my big, I'll call it, this is going to be funny, I'm going to call it a disappointment. So at the 2010 Olympics, I was to go to Whistler and cover all the events at Whistler for SportsCenter and be the reporter. At the last week before, whatever, they're like, no, we need to move you to Vancouver. You are going to be the SportsCenter backup anchor and you're covering men's hockey. And I was done. I was disappointed. And
Really?
so most people are like, what's wrong with you? You're covering the Olympics and men's hockey with Sydney and everybody. And I'm like, I want the athletes, like those athletes who gave everything just to be a bobsledder who you don't ever talk about. That's who I wanted to cover. So I was, I know it sounds dumb, but I was always disappointed not to be able to cover Whistler. So I've always enjoyed amateur athletes. Now, trying to cover pro athletes or interview them, that's a challenge sometimes.
Yeah. Because, I mean, you're very good, like, on your show, like, getting those guys to be funny and open up, but, like, it is a skill.
So sometimes it takes a while. So you never really come out right away and hammer them with, like, where are the missing funds? Like, you're never going to get anything. They're going to shut down. So you try to ease into it, and you may lob some questions in, but they need to feel comfortable. And so I've always tried to make sure they somehow know I'm not here to try and make a viral clip. I'm just here to get some answers. Like, I just want people to know who these people
Who
are.
they're.
So same thing when I was in scrums is it could be anybody, but I don't know. I'll say Danny Heatley, and if I had to cover him over perhaps his trial or whatever, I'm going way back. The only thing I would say is, Danny, I need to ask you these questions. And you can say no, and you can say, I don't have any comment, and that's fair, and I understand. I just need you to know that these questions are coming because they need to get asked. And so, as long as you always tell them before you shove a camera in their face, they will appreciate it and they will trust you. And so, if they don't trust you, you can tell in an interview. If they do trust you, they will answer the question typically.
Was that something someone told you, or you learned quite early
No,
in your career? Oh.
I always try to say, like, and I'm no genius interviewer. Don't like, I'm no Mike Wallace. I'm Brent Wallace. Is, I've always, what would it be like for me to stand in front of all those cameras? And so I will always protect the interview. I'll just like, listen, I just need you to know these questions are coming, and I don't want you to be feel sandbagged. I don't want you to feel like, why'd you do that to me? So that's how you can't burn bridges when you got to cover a player for however many days they're in the National Hockey League or whatever, like, I don't know, 250 days, whatever it is. Like, you need those people on your side. So just being fair with them will come back.
For the TV side and doing that, like, what was that like for you? And what did you try to kind of impress upon like the viewers when you're at, the letter monster, or however you want to describe
We can say it. It's okay. They hey, listen, they
it.
were very good to me. I wouldn't be anywhere where I am without TSN. So was I happy they let me go? No. But if I look back and go, hey, like I'm pretty fortunate. I traveled throughout Europe. I've traveled all over North America. I had a pretty good time covering a lot of cool things. So the only thing I've ever used as a reporter in the back of my head was don't like you don't want to be the same repetitive person. So tell me, the viewer, something I don't know. And it could be like, and listen, I'm not trying to split the atom. You've got 90 seconds or a minute and 50 seconds to try and tell somebody something. Like, but I just tell me something I don't know, just anything. And where the viewer goes, huh, I didn't know that. That's all. And it, listen, it could be his middle name for all I know, but it's just something different. That's all I'm trying to come up with here. Because covering the power play for 82 games is really painful on people. They just, they, so like, I don't know what, I can always remember stories throughout my career, not ones I've done, just ones that people have done. And what is it that you were like, it's never about the stats. You remember them because that's how it made you feel. It's you were, it's, there was some feeling that you took away from that going, oh, that's what you're trying to impress on people is you just want to give them the emotion. Stats are just a way to get to telling someone the story about emotion. The people always get, why do you ask that question when they win the Stanley Cup of how does it feel?
Of
Well, because that's what
course.
you want to know. Like,
Yeah,
I don't
of
know, there's no
course.
other way to put it. I understand it may seem like a lazy
Yeah.
question, but when you win this, like, what are you going to say? Hey, in the third period, it was 2-2. It's, you made a pass into this. No one get, tell me how it feels to win the Stanley Cup. Because everybody watching at some point likely wanted to be that person winning the Stanley Cup. Winning the Stanley Cup. They were either grade six and they realized they weren't going to make it. But at some point, they were like, I want to be an NHL player. How many times do you see that written on somebody's little,
Oh, all the
when I
time.
grow up, I want to be an NHL player. So they just want to know what it's like. For one moment, they're trying to understand what it would be like for them to be on the ice at the same time with the Stanley Cup. To just tell them what the emotion of that day is. I rambled, but that's the answer.
No, that's okay. It's good. You're one of your co-hosts, Graham Nichols, I've become pretty good friends with over the, the past year, but he and I've seen you, firsthand just how much you how hard you work, really. Was that something that like you just kind of have that ability to just always grind? Is that like you almost hate be having nothing to do? Like what's like
That's
just
my ADHD, maybe.
I don't know. I'm curious.
I've ne so I only know how to do things full. Like, I can't half-ass it. So when I was a kid, we used to, no one will understand this because you've never seen it, but rake blueberries in fields for my grandparents for 10 hours a day. And then, like, I was 6 years old.
Wow.
And then I had two paper routes, one in the morning, one in the afternoon. And I worked at Canadian Tire while I went to school when I was, I had to get a note from my parents because I was 15. And then during when I went to broadcasting school, when it was done, I had to work, or I didn't have to. I get, well, I had to pay my bills. I worked 8 to 5 Monday to Friday at Canadian Tire and volunteered 6 to midnight every night for a year at the
Oh.
TV station. So I only know how to just all out. That's it. So people are like, what do you do? I'm like, I work. So I work more now on the show than I do as a TSN reporter. Yeah.
With that, I know you have your weekends off. Is what do you do with them? Do
I
you
don't,
just, oh,
Alex.
really? Okay. I just know you like don't come to the rink, and I don't mean that in a disparaging way. I just know
Yeah.
that's like a hard and
So
fast rule.
Saturday I try to take off. But Sunday, like we have a Monday show, so Sunday I'll work on the Monday show. So Friday and Saturday are kind of like my weekends. And so I, the only reason I don't go Saturday is because we don't have a show. So I feel like, am I giving anybody anything different at the moment? Am I just, so I just try, like, if I could get a producer to help me a little more, I'd probably be there more often. So it's funny, I've never had this conversation before, but I need to find the balance of where the show is as the coming in hot show and where the show is as covering the Ottawa Senators as like a beat reporter. And I don't think I can do all of it. and I need to figure out how to do some of it. I don't like doing things half-assed, so it bugs me.
We might do this podcast and like backtrack, but I feel like I should, we're right here. What was that pivot like for you from TV to podcasting, just in terms of like the work and like the adjustment and everything?
You ever know that saying, like, you don't know what you don't know? That's me. So, and I didn't wait. Like, I always hear these people like, oh, you get laid off from your job. And I had taken a 6-month vacation. I'm like, what? So I remember day four, I called Mark Mathot. My wife and I had quickly, oh, I don't know how many, it wasn't a big conversation. Like, why don't you do a podcast? And I'm like, okay. And I knew I needed a co-host, and Mark had, Meth, or I guess Meth as we call him, we were always buddies. Like, he brought me sleeping pills to Switzerland when I forgot mine one time at the World Championships. So, but being Meth, he just dropped them off at the front desk of a foreign hotel, just some pills. It's like, here, these are for Brent Wallace. He's coming to get. I'm like, do you think they had maybe checked, like, the authorities, like Meth, next time? Anyway,
Love math.
I called him. He was like, yeah, I'm in, let's do this. So that was day four. So we launched, I think, almost a month to the day after I lost my job, and then I've just kept going ever since. But excuse me, I made a lot of mistakes early on in that show. Didn't understand where we were trying to, like, I just didn't know, and you're trying to figure that out as you go, and you just keep going, and then you make a mistake and you move on. Like, I didn't know how to sell the show. I didn't know how much money I could make. I didn't know any of that stuff. And you just plow through it. And we tried to, like, find salespeople and try to find this and that. It's just, you just try and figure it out.
Where do you feel you're at with the podcast now? Like, I mean, it's obviously you've had different co-hosts and everything, but like just in your comfortability, understanding the
I'm not
market,
happy with
the
it.
no?
So I should probably stop doing these shows because I say too many things sometimes. Like, I want it to be as dominant as any podcast in the country. Like, I want it to be number one. There's no chance of me probably doing that when you have Spin Chicklets, 32 Thoughts, Overdrive, if you call it a podcast. I mean, if you look at the podcast stats, they're always at the top. But, like, I want to be one of those. And so I spend all my waking hours thinking of, how do I make the show better? Can I get to five? Do I do 5 a week? Does the show suffer if we do more shows? Is it better if we do less? Like, all our numbers are year over year are way up every year. And so I know the show continues to grow. I don't know what the sweet spot is. I would love to do 5 days a week, but I need to know I'm not wasting people's time. And that's a big part for me. Like, I don't want you to tune in just to, because we're doing a show. Like, I want you to get something out of it. Always they tell me something I don't know, and that's what I need to figure out.
Is there for you, like, it sounds like you're pretty competitive about it. I'm just curious, like, for you, like, what do you see that next level as? And has it just like this year, like, you've been around the team, you have, like, how much do you think that's been beneficial for you?
Great. It's a huge, that's aside from the co-host, that's probably the biggest part of the show, is like, because now the players that you want to have on to interview know who you are, know what you're about, know that you're not trying to just get a view or a click. Like, I'm no different journalistically than I was before I did a podcast.
That's interesting.
I still see it the same way, which butts heads. Like, I've butted heads with producers in the past, like, Brent, we need you to do it this way. I'm like, but I don't know how to do it that way. So I'm just trying to tell a story. I just want it to be like a Daily Sens sports show. But I don't know how necessarily. Am I going to wear people out if we do it every day? Am I going to wear myself out if we do it every day? Like, we did 4 days a week as it is. So is five a big step? Probably not, but I just don't want to waste people's time.
I'm curious what your opinion on this is. Like, you've had a couple NHL former NHLers be your co-hosts, and we don't need to relitigate all like kind of what's happened, but why do you think people are so gravitated to, co-hosts? And I love Yorkie, like, greatest guy, funny dude, I love him. But like, why do you think people just want that former NHLers kind of experience and talking points and everything in a show or on TV and everything?
Because it's just the experience. So it's the obvious, A, they've played it. So,
Yeah.
and I always get this, Brent, Jason York has played the game. You don't know what you're talking about. I'm like, okay. Like, there's lots. Ken Hitchcock never played the game. He's in the, I believe he's in the Hall of Fame as an NHL coach. Like, there's lots of people that haven't played the game that understand it. But Yorkie has the insights of the locker room. And none of us outside of it can appreciate what that is. And that's the sacred area. So, with Yorkie, I just want him to get me into that locker room when the doors are closed, when the we're on the bench, when no one else can hear anything that's going on. That's why people relate to hockey players, or they want to hear from them. They just want you again, and I go back to it. I want to live that experience because I can't, you can tell me what it's like. And that's why people love players.
How do you feel about your nickname, Salty Wally?
I haven't been asked this question before. I've embraced it.
Okay.
So it's fine.
I will say when I first met you, because I had heard it and you were very nice. You said, "Hey, Alex," like, and I was like, "Oh, like he's really nice, and you've been great to me." So I don't find you salty at all. But I'm also, we're not together all the time or anything like that. But I just find it funny. Like, but Yorkie
Yes.
loves it. Yorkie loves that
Yeah. So
to.
I let him have it. If you don't know me, I might seem different or cold or standoffish, but I'm not overly outgoing. I'm kind of introverted. So I kind of don't engage a lot if I don't really know you. The other thing is I hate stupid. I'm like Max Verstappen, who just like I don't like going to events for small talk.
Just
Just to have small talk. It's not me, which is why I don't like the chit chat part of the show. But at
That's
the
funny.
rink where people are like, why are you? When I went to the rink, I went to work. I didn't like, I am focused on what I need to do. And that was mostly like, I need to do this or get this done or I'm watching for this. I'm there to work. And people are like, why are you so intense? I'm like, I just want to do my job the best I can. So I was always the thing at the rink where people didn't understand. They're like, hey, and I'm like, no. Like I get it. I can joke, but I need to work. I need to understand what's going on. I need to see on the ice. Like if somebody leaves the rink or leaves the ice in practice and I don't see it, I have people calling me going, what's happening? I'm like, well, I don't know. So that was a big part for me. Just always trying to think of what stories I wanted to do, or who's around, or how this is playing out. Anyway, all that stuff. That's all.
Can I say what I've admired just because I was at the Hockey News 2 years ago, didn't see you around the rink, and obviously you were around. The way you
Yeah.
worked a room to me was I was like, you'd go up to players, you get to know them, you chat, like how much of that is like just shooting the shit, or is it trying to kind of develop sources, or maybe a bit of both? I find that sometimes with players a little bit, but you're not salty to them, I'll tell you that.
Only to Nick Cousins. I only know, like, again, I only know how to be me. So it's not like I don't have a different agenda, but I do like to talk to players to understand who they are and what makes them tick. Like, all we ever do is want something from the players. They don't ever ask anything from us, ever. And so I always feel guilty going, can I get this? Can I get that? And I've been fortunate throughout my career to I have relationships with people that this player may know or that player or Drake Batherson and I being from the Maritimes, all that stuff. So there sometimes, but we just chat and you just like I also get a, I will say from the guys who've been there when I was around before I was laid off, they still respected me, so they would always just chat. And I've always gotten that from those players, like. Thomas Chabot has been great to me
Great
forever,
dude.
and Drake Batherson and Josh Norris and Brady. And I didn't cover Brady a lot, but he was always very good to me. And then he would do the show whenever we asked. And so I just want to chat with them. Like Sometimes you just ask them, like, I don't know, you find out stuff. Like, what did I find out from someone?
Which
And I had,
player?
oh, I found out about the Linus Allmark dinner that he paid for in Vegas. And it was an off the charts dinner. And it was just over conversation of like, hey, what did you guys do or whatever? And they were quick to tell me. And I was like, can I use this in the show? And they're like, yeah. So, I will also ask, like, can I share this? And then if they say no, I'm like, okay, well, that's fair. They just try to look like, I don't want to ever embarrass a player or try to get them purposely pissed off. So, I will be straight up with them for the most part.
What's it like for you? Like, maybe not just with the players, but we hear a lot of stuff, right? As a journalist, I think you hear much more than I do, just with your, you've been here for so long. But what's that kind of differentiator for you, where it's like, oh, I could tell this, but like, can I? And is it journalistic? Like, how much do you think about that? And what's maybe that like line of demarcation for you?
Huge. That's the biggest thing you battle with all the time. Like, what is it worth to me in my career in order to tell this story? I'm gonna hold off on this one, right? So, is it fair or is it right? Okay, maybe not to the average person at home. Because, and I just saw a tweet about this like yesterday. And I can't, I believe it's Jonah YYZ. If I think that's the Twitter handle, right? The guy who
I've
covers
seen,
him
I
in the Toronto.
recognize it.
He said, like, why is it we always hear after the fact that these media members knew the stories and didn't report them? And I will tell you, it's very simple. If you have to go into the room the next day and you need to cover the team as part of your job, trying to score one big point and never being able to have another interview again is not really worth it in the long run. Like, what does it mean to me to be able to tell these stories all along? Like, sure, I can tell this story, but I may never get another one ever again, or they may never come on my show. Or so I understand this. This is a huge issue for me because I understand, like, well, then you're not really a media member. And I'm like, yeah,
No,
like, I
bro.
understand the argument. I just, if I've got to be in the room to face the team the next day, you better be prepared for whatever's coming.
I just for me, like, and again, I'm not as plugged in as you, but like, you hear stuff and it's like, well, I could write that or tweet that, but like, I don't have like rock, like, it's probably 95% true, but is it 100% true? Probably not. And you don't want to throw yourself, you
So
know.
here's one. Okay, here's one. I free so it's got to be 06, 07, or maybe it's, I don't know. When did Wade become a free agent? Would have
Oh
been
six. Like the when he left or when he stayed?
under Brian Murray as GM. So it's later. So it's like 2010, 11-ish.
2009, 10, yeah, something. I think it was nine.
I forget
Might have
that
been
doesn't.
eight.
Anyway,
Anyways, yeah.
I found out the night before that Brian Murray was going to ask Wade to waive his no trade clause the next day. So, which just coincidentally happened to be that the Sens were skating at Sensplex the next day. For those who don't know, the team will get dressed at the rink and then drive over and skate at Sensplex and then drive back and do everything at the rink. And I see Wade's dad watching practice. And I knew Wade, Garth, for a while. I said, hey, they asked Wade to waive his no trade clause. He says, I'm not sure, but I'm driving back with him. I will find out for you. And I'm like, all right. So he comes down the stands and he goes, yeah, he did. And I was like, oh, okay. So here's where I go. I called Darren Dreger and I'm like, Dregs, they've asked Wade to waive his no trade clause. I don't want anything to do with this story. And so Wade, Dregs takes it, calls Brian Murray. Brian loses his mind. He's like, why do I need to find out about my players from you guys? I'm like, oh, okay. So he's pissed. I feel like the next day or something, they called Garth into the office and snapped on him, saying that he gave me
Really?
this information and blah, blah, blah. And I remember Garth going, you do whatever you need to do. That, like, he was pissed. And so That was one of those stories. I'm like, what does it mean? It doesn't serve me any good to do this story. So I just called Dregs and said, here's the story. So yeah. So that's sometimes the easiest way is you find someone else outside the market, Bob, Dregs, Pierre Lebrun, whoever, and let them have the story.
I think this is a perfect segue, and I've been thinking about this question for a while, but
Uh-oh.
what made you ask that question to Melnick at the Heritage Classic that got him so upset?
So
And
now, for those who don't
because
know, Eugene Melnick and I used to be very, I won't say tight or close, but I could call him in a heartbeat. When I did Big Brown trying to win the Triple Crown at the Belmont Stakes, whatever year that was, and Eugene was big into horses. So he and I talked for a few hours about horses, and he told me, and so I understood everything about horses because of him. But leading up to, and this was years prior, leading up to 2010, he had started to say some things and do some stuff behind the scenes that people like he staff weren't getting paid their bonuses. So, and then they would rewrite them or they would try and change them, and they were trying to all the staff who were like in sales and stuff just weren't getting them. And then stuff got penny pinched. There was an equipment guy that was told he was going on a trip that didn't get to go on a trip, like just all kinds of stupid stuff. Anyway, coming into that day, I knew what was going on, and I had confirmed this stuff was happening. And I still wasn't going to ask the question, but he showed up. He was like 2 hours late, and then he starts going off about, we're going to move the team, and if you don't like the McDonald's, you move the McDonald's. And I'm like, what is this guy doing? And so he didn't seem to have any issues talking about anything. So I asked the question. Afterwards, he's like, where'd you get that information? I'm like, well, I'm not telling you. He's like, oh, he's like, why didn't you come to me first? I'm like, because you're like borderline psychotic right now. Like, I wasn't going to call you because I didn't need to. But anyway, he's like, okay. And that was inside the tent. I'm now down at the field or ice level, about to do a hit with Bruce Garioch and Frank Saravalli. And he storms over to me. And oh, because the summer prior or that summer, I don't want to, Ian and I had done some digging on stuff that was going on. And he found out he wasn't happy. So he came over and he was like, I hear about all this stuff you're working on, and all these stories and people you're talking to. And he goes, I'm gonna bury you. I'm like, okay then. So that was the end of the Brent Eugene friendship. And then after that, he tried to have me relieved of my duties for years.
I heard about a plane too. Am I wrong
Okay,
about
so
that?
this is like December 19th, if I'm not mistaken. December 23rd, I think it is. I flew on the charter to wherever, no big deal. December 27th, we were to go to Boston, or maybe the 23rd was to Boston, and whatever the 27th or 29th. And I remember, so I'd always just send a text or an email to the travel guy, Jordan, and he'd be like, sure. He called me back and says, Brent, I regret to inform you, your request to travel has been declined. I'm like, oh, okay then. So that was the end of the charter, which was fine because then I started to get points for travel.
That's good. You can go to like Malibu or to Florida,
But I will like traveling on the charter is great because you
Yeah,
just
you
show up and
just
get
get
on a
in.
plane. But yeah, now I get the points.
What's it been like for, you know, I know Ian pretty well, and he had his bouts with Melnick, like a lot of people. What's it been like just to seeing how different this franchise is now, like, you know, pre-Melnick, or I guess Melnick era to now
Yeah.
post with
Yeah.
Ann Lauer?
Like, and so it's just so we're clear, like not all of the Eugene Melnick era was not so crazy. Mostly just after he became ill. It was like people were talk now about after the past year and a bit, like it's professional. Like it seems like a professional hockey team. I'm like, yeah, this is the way it used to go. That's the big part. It's you just this is the way things are supposed to run. And most of us have been around other franchises and see what's going on. And yeah, like you're supposed to be able to call the PR guy and go, hey, listen, I'd like to request this. Let's see if we can make it happen or whatever. As opposed to the last group, they came out with a 9-page media accreditation list just so they could get Don Brennan not to be. Well, I was part of it, but I was given
Whoa.
accreditation on the very last day. But they, like Eugene, didn't want Don Brennan covering the team anymore, and so they made up this ridiculous 9-page process to tell me how many times you've covered the team, what are 10 examples of your work that you need, like just stupid stuff. And I refused to do it because one, they kept calling me Brett, and two, I'm like we're the rights
Jeez.
holders. Like I don't have to fill out an accreditation form. And so I got a call from TSN the day of the Sens golf tournament, which the next day is training camp. And so they're like, and it was Carrie Croft who they had hired and brought in. And she's at the back of the golf course and I'm at the front. And she's never come over to say hi or anything, whatever. And TSN's like, hey Brent, what's this accreditation thing? I'm like, Kurt, I've told you about this. Like I don't keep 10 things of work in a live broadcast that I have to send off. I said, they know exactly who I am. And they're in the email, like, Brent, we're well aware who you are. You're well respected. We understand, but we still need this. I'm like, well, okay, I won't be at practice tomorrow. TSN filled it out and sent it in. I was a little disappointed. So off we go to the next day. But Don wasn't allowed.
I mean, let's just say getting credentials about, 18 months ago was not a fun and simple process. Not
No.
with Sportsnet. With Ian just said, like, okay, I don't know about you, buddy, but he might be nice to you. But no, Ian's been great. But I guess for you, like, you talk about like this management. We'll segue into maybe some, Sen stuff. Like, how would you evaluate maybe the Ann Lauer era, just in terms of like ownership? Like, obviously it's, more functional
Just
than maybe.
calm. Like, it's just calm. You feel like it's not disconnected. I remember during the end of the Mellencamp era, like he had just basically obliterated the business side of things, where he just nobody wanted to do business with the Sens. Nobody wanted to sponsor because they were just treated like pieces of crap. And so Ann Lauer came in and realized early on of bringing the business community back to the fold. And it's now a community, like you feel part of the community. It's not just the Ottawa Senators. We can buy tickets if we want. They don't have the seats tarped off as much anymore. Like just all the nonsense that was happening during the Melnick era. Now it's, yeah, like I want to go support them. I like the owner. I like what they're doing. They have the best interest at heart. They're trying to raise money for the community. They're doing lots of stuff to help out and make this place a better environment. Yes, I will support them. And that was what it used to be like, instead of just you needed to build a winner in order for them to show up. This community now believes Michael Ann Lauer, what he wants to do, who he is as a person, that he's honest and upfront. And so that plays a huge part. This is a small town. It's a very
It's
small
so
town.
small.
And so you need to be open and honest, and they can tell you, or it can tell if you're fake or not. And if you're fake, they don't want any part of you. And so far, he's been open and honest with everything he's done.
With that, how much do you think, they made the playoffs essentially in his full first year in charge? How much do you think just having stable, calm ownership, Steos as well, who I think has done a pretty good job, all things considered. How much do you think that'll translate into more of a winning product moving forward?
Well, it's got to, doesn't it, Alex? Like, you gotta. Now, don't get me wrong. They could easily take a step back, as every team, like you saw New Jersey, and you're like, well, they should.
The
They're maybe a cup
Rangers.
contender, right? Like, the rain, like, I don't know what happened in New York, but you can see that. But you can also see, like, if everything goes according to plan, if Brady Tkachuk and Tim Stützle, Dylan Cousins, all those guys who you expect to be better are, then this should be a better team. Now, they still have that juggernaut up front of Florida, Tampa, and Toronto of trying to unseat one of them in the top three in the Atlantic. But all things considered, if this team is still solidly in a playoff spot, isn't that all you can ask for at the moment? So, I like I think they've done what they said they were going to do, or what they tried to set out to do. And they were a little handicapped at the beginning, Alex, as you know.
Just a little bit.
They couldn't dress a player one night because they didn't have any cap space. They've turned that around where it's, yes, the minor league farm system is a mess, I still think. I mean, they've got lots to do there, but at least now the other problem with the minor, when we complain about there not being any prospects, because the prospects are playing in Ottawa,
That's true.
is they've got some work to do. Is it all roses and gravy? And no, but and if they made mistakes with player acquisition, sure, but I think for the most part, this is what you expect your organization to do. You can see they at least are trying to win.
That's the hope, Brent. That's the hope.
Yeah, but and
It
like
felt
Steve
like it
Staios doesn't come
wasn't.
out and ever and like he doesn't sell you too much hope. You have to sell hope because that's how you sell tickets. And every year, like, oh, we're gonna win the Stanley Cup. And no, I understand you gotta say that. But in previous years, we would hear lots of nonsense and
I
too
was gonna
many
ask.
just word salad. Where Steve doesn't say it, he just shows it to you, and you believe in the play. Like, the players they brought in are good people, and I think that has a big part of it. It's just like, I don't know, but you, I mean, you're in the room. I can't think of too many guys you're like, I don't like him.
No one on the
Right?
team
Like,
from my
so
perspective.
that's not the same in every year. I just think they brought in some really quality people. And then Jordan Spence, who they brought in, is another one. Lars Eller, like these guys are really good people. I think that plays a big part in how they play on the ice. I really do.
I
Like, look
guess
at the
with
Rangers. The Rangers had 10 times the talent.
10 times the dysfunction,
Right? They
the
were an
egos,
absolute
everything.
mess. And because I don't think they got along. There's just two, a person, you've got to find the right personalities. Anyway, I keep cutting you off. I apologize.
It's, I guess with that, like for me, like Brady Tkachuk had so much rumors, of his name out there, and obviously
Yeah.
when they started to win, they kind of dissipated. But I'm curious for you, like he is such a galvanizing force. Like, how much do you think, now that the team it feels like has enough talent around him to be that playoff team and be good, and he was basically on one leg or one groin or whatever, how much do you think that's going to really propel this team next year when they have maybe some more horses experience and everything?
So you're just trying to ask me if Brady's staying or not, which I get.
Basically.
Right? Which is, it's a fair question. We saw it with Matthew, and we understand how close they are and that they like to play together. I get all that. I wholeheartedly, from everything I know, don't believe that Brady wants to leave. Could he the next day say, I want to? Sure. But I don't believe for a second. I think he loves this area too much. He loves being the guy. He is the captain. He is well respected. The community loves him back. I don't believe he wants to go anywhere. I really think he's just he's one of the nicest people I've ever met, and I've covered this sport for a long time.
Great guy.
But does that mean, like, if they miss the playoffs or whatever, he's like, you know what?
See.
Maybe it's time. I get it. Like, and if he does, he's no different than
His
half the
brother.
league. Like, I don't know why we're so caught up in this particular player who, by all intents and purposes, has never said a word about leaving.
Never. No.
I mean, I don't know. Maybe he's had conversations with Steve or Michael Andlauer. Maybe. But we don't have, like, you and I have never heard a public word or have any kind of inclination from Brady Tkachuk that he doesn't want to be here for one second. There's nothing that he's done, said, looked at, or anything that says he doesn't want to be here. And so I, to this day, unless you somehow change my mind, do not believe Brady Tkachuk wants to leave.
Well, this is my goal. I'm going to try to change it. No, I'm kidding. How much do you think of that maybe noise comes from a fan base that, had Spezza leave and Heatley leave and Carlson? And how much do you think it's every other team looks at Tkachuk and says he's American, his brother left, and we
Yeah,
want him out? Like,
yeah.
where do you see that
It's valid.
bound?
Like, but I still think that the noise comes from outside of Ottawa.
I think so too.
And if it's from St. Louis, which I get as the home base of the Tkachuks, and Keith's sister's brother's cousin, this dishwasher guy at the low says something, you can't control that. And I've seen that stuff a long time. I'll use Andre Waugh only because he's a friend of mine and he won't be upset. Well, he doesn't listen very often. It's like he said, I heard Claude Giroux wants to go to Montreal.
Yeah, I saw that.
We okay, like, but you don't have any concrete evidence. And someone said, well, I heard from his childhood friend that he wants to go to Montreal. I'm like, you
That's
can't,
not.
you're just gonna make that stuff up. You just have to ignore, like, they're just rumors. I understand sometimes rumors become reality, but I got to take it from where it comes from. And if I don't hear it from like Elliot Friedman, Darren Dreger, Chris Johnson, there's probably a few others, maybe Frank Cervelli. Like, I'm not buying that Brady wants to leave.
I've thought about this, and maybe I'm giving you a segment for coming in hot, but
I'll take it.
is Brady the most beloved senator since Alfredson? Like, is there anyone outside of
Oh, well,
Alfie that
Carlson was still here.
do you think like the fans took him in as much as they've taken in Brady? Because I don't like just the Brady chants and
Yes.
everything. I don't, okay.
And the only reason I say that is because one out of every 10 people in Ottawa still thinks that Eric Carlson should be back as an Ottawa senator, which is
Can we
mind-boggling to me.
rehash? Well, anyways, continue.
I feel like Eric is in that realm. It's close though. He was so dominant, and maybe it's
He was
just because
so
he was
good.
such a dominant player
Yeah.
and won a Norris Trophy. It's a good question. Different crowd too.
It is.
Like, so 2010, 15 era, like, it's not as, I could be
Young.
wrong, it's not that, it is 10 years ago, is so not as social media as it is now, right? And not as vocal, I think, as it is now. I just find today is a lot more vocal a group in general worldwide as opposed to back 10 years ago.
Did you feel like being at those couple games, like in the playoffs, like when was the last time you remember a crowd being that just into it in a playoff game? Like, was that
Yeah.
like Shades of 07 before
It's
that?
tough to.
Like,
So, as we've discussed at the beginning of the show, Alex, I'm old and don't.
I did
Sometimes I
not
just
say
blend
that.
together.
You said
Fair.
that, Brent.
The building has always been loud to, like, in playoffs,
Yeah.
it's always been loud. But, like, I've done Cup Final since. So, I think I did Cup Final up until 2019. It's a loud. Like, people make a big deal, like, oh, it's so loud in Ottawa. Oh, I've heard louder. Like, I get it. There's always going to be a certain bias towards the building you're in.
Sure.
But that, like, and I'll say game six is loud. And the
Oh.
tying goal is loud. Like, I don't know if building to building, what, because everything seems different. Like, but it's as loud as any building I've been in. I can put it to you that way.
I guess maybe backtracking a little bit to the Carlson stuff, like what do you make of the fans just wanting, is it just nostalgia at its
They do this to
finest or?
everybody though. Like,
Yeah.
oh, we got to bring back Nick Paul and we got to bring back,
Nick
oh,
Paul.
like Chris Tierney. Like, no, we just because they played in Ottawa or they are from Ottawa doesn't mean they play for the Ottawa Senators. Like, I hear this with all players who are, well, he's a local boy. Well, that doesn't, so it doesn't mean he fits into the organization. I just think that we have this nostalgia thing of when times were good and where players were good, that that's still the same and it's not anymore. By the way, I would put Nick Paul on my team. But
Yeah,
there
of
are,
course.
like, I just don't see, like, oh, he's available, we should bring him back. Dylan DeMello was one. Like, well, maybe, but just because they played here doesn't mean that they need to come back and they're going to be the same player they were when they were here. That's all.
I'm curious for you, like obviously you, as you mentioned, you lived through like kind of that early 2000s, you covered the team when they were at the heights, and I look at this core, you see Brady, Timmy, Sanderson, like pretty damn good players, all pretty young. Like, what do you see the ceiling of this team in the next 2, 3 years? Like, do you think there is a window for them to, I don't want to say the Stanley Cup word, but like get in that fringe
Well,
contender place?
so let me put to you, well, I'm going to flip this to you. I'll answer your question, but I'm going to
Sure.
ask you a question. If they aren't a Stanley Cup contender within 3 years, or I think, is Brady 2 years?
Three,
Does he have,
three.
is 3 years
Brady's
left,
three.
right?
Can
Okay. If they're not in 3 years, then it's going to be a different team.
I like that answer.
I think it's going to be drastically different. I'm not sure that even by in 2 years from now, it's not a different team. Like next year, if you look at the guys currently, including Jordan Spence and Lars Eller and Marilyn and with Ullmark as the goal, like if you look at the 21 players they currently have, eight of them have contracts coming up next year. It could be a vastly different team again. So this, like, yeah, they've got to try and show that they are in the window, or I think stuff happens. It's the same with every team. It's tough to keep everybody together. It's tough to keep everybody happy. Sometimes you feel like you got to make a move in order to shake things up and make players different, like the Josh Norris, Dylan Cousins trade. Sometimes you feel like you got to do that, and then suddenly your team is completely different.
I'm on the same wavelength as you, as I actually do think probably not this season, but the following season, that's where it's like if they don't look like at least a team that maybe like even like Winnipeg last year, where you're like maybe they won't, they're probably not going to win the cup, but you can see a pathway where they go to the conference finals or to, you know, the finals. I feel like they have to be in that window, maybe not next year, but the next 2 years, especially with, as you said, like, you know, Brady's contract's up too, and does he want to play, and just moving forward. I think the thing that they do have is you have Stützle and Sanderson on those bargain contracts for 4 or 5 years, so you have a bit of insulation, which I think just to I think this team is set up to be relatively good for as long as Tim Stützle and Jake Sanderson are signed on your team, which is what, like another 4 or 5 years or something like that.
But okay. So you may have them, but you've got to insulate all those players with quality. And that's the biggest challenge, is now to fill out your roster to make it so that you are the Florida Panthers, where you have a third line that could be a first line perhaps on another team. Like, okay, so maybe, but Brad Marchand could be a first line player in a heartbeat. So that's where the challenge is. And I think you got 3 years to get there. The same, like even when Ottawa, they lost four straight to Toronto, four straight playoff series. Well, we knew that change was coming. Like they were a dominant hockey team. Like, well, we can't win with this group. We got to make change. So if you don't show that you can progress and make significant strides, I think you see change without question. And the free agency and contracts, it's so hard to keep groups together now.
What do you think of maybe Steelers' moves this summer then? I know you've touched upon the podcast,
Yeah. Thanks for watching. Is
but
like I got if Lars Eller is still the same guy I think he is that can skate, I like the move. I think it's very good because if Shane Pinto or Dylan Cousins is hurt, Lars Eller can easily play in your top six. Like he can be anywhere in that lineup. And I think this roster, instead of us looking at it going, you need to have two top six, one shutdown line, one energy line. This is a group where they play anywhere. So David Perron can be a top six player if he needs to be, or Nick Cousins can move around. Michael Amadio, if he has to, moves. Like they're just interchangeable. Everybody's asking, where does Claude Giroux play? Well, I don't really know, but chances are with only two players playing all 82 games last year, he's going to move around. So I think we're too caught up in where everybody slots in as opposed to you give me these players and I'll make it work for Travis Green. And so the Jordan Spence, I think, is really underrated. And
Yeah, I
I
love
don't know
that.
how the whole Nick Jensen thing plays out. I find it weird. One, that his wife continues to post stuff of him doing things that I'm not sure the organization is overly thrilled about. However, he is doing it. He is rollerblading. He is bowling. He's like, so I have no reason to think he's not ready for camp, but everybody, like, I don't know what the procedure was. So I think Jordan Spence becomes a huge piece perhaps of this group. And I don't think Nick Mattanapolo is ready to be a top four. So I think Jordan Spence becomes
No.
that guy if Nick Jensen can't go. So those are the big parts for me. Is Levi Mäkiläinen ready to be the backup? I would like to have seen him had one more year in Belleville, but maybe he is. Maybe I just like, maybe we saw exactly what he is. I have been told, and I think so. Well, the things that we don't know when we do all these draft picks and we make
Yeah.
all these prognostications. By the
There
way, never use a word over three syllables. That's what always a rule of mine.
you
Is
go. And
like his work ethic is off the charts, apparently. Like, so when it came down to between him and Mads Søgaard, it was Mäkiläinen who was and is not as technically apparently as good as Mads Søgaard. I'm not an NHL goalie. I will always defer to people who have played the position. But what I am told is he is off ice and his competitiveness and his work ethic put him on that roster.
Yeah, I
Because
mean,
he hasn't played enough to really go, yeah, I think without question, he's the backup. Like, if would you from everything that we've always ever understood about figuring out who the NHL goalies and backup should be, you're always told the young guy is supposed to play a lot and see lots of shots and be in the AHL and get seasoned to possibly contend to be a number one guy. This is a rare thing for Ottawa to do, to bring in a guy this young with this little NHL
experience.
experience. Thank you. And make him the backup. But I also think that Linus Ullmark's never played 50 games. And so maybe he plays 30 games. And 30 games is probably enough for Mäkiläinen, and plus being on the ice every day for practice.
The only thing that I feel like goaltending's so voodoo, and it's just like, oh, the guy could play well and then not. The one thing is they have enough space if they want to bargain bin and get Alex Lyon, who feels like always that goalie that represents like a tweener of can sometimes play 20 games in a row, but probably you don't want as a starter heading into a playoffs, et cetera. But like they have enough leniency that way. But I agree, like it is a bet.
But if you, okay. So this is like, you can't send Mäkiläinen down, if I'm not mistaken. He's on a one-way
Nope.
contract. And Mads Søgaard is on a one-way contract, who will likely clear waivers and not have an issue.
Yeah.
But if Mads, so, like, if Alex Lyon is better than Mads Søgaard to you, if that's the thinking, then Mads Søgaard shouldn't probably be a goalie for your organization. That's my thought process.
Did you find it interesting? I mean, I don't blame GMs for,
When he said
maybe
Levi
not.
Mäkiläinen was going to be the backup,
No, not that part. I did ask him that,
that
but
seems shocking to me that he actually admitted it. But yeah, go
I
ahead.
was shocked too. It was great for my story. I was very pleased. But more how much he's talked about Mads Søgaard the past like couple of weeks. Like I just was like, oh, that's interesting. Like he kind of seemed like going out of his way. And I don't know if that is semantics that's telling the league if that's they truly that they believe in him, but they definitely are saying that Mads Søgaard is in the equation for whatever it's worth.
I know, and
It's
I'm
weird. I
like
don't.
you. Are we trying to trade him, or are we trying to pump his tires to make him feel better? I don't know what the answer is, but it's clear, regardless of any of that, if actions speak louder than words, Mads Søgaard is not in the future plans with the Ottawa Senators. So whatever they say besides that is just, like, as I like to say, word salad to me.
Yeah. I mean, you've been in this game enough, but I've been around, I've interviewed Levy a couple times, and to call him stoic might be an understatement. Like, just very
Doesn't get
calm, cool.
rattled.
No. And I feel like if you're going to bet on anyone's demeanor, especially in goaltending, like, that's what I would bet on. It might not work. He might not be good enough. His numbers in the AHL were great, but he's still young, but it's just an inch. I love how we've gone on a Levi Mäkiläinen debate. I just, that's when you know it's good podcasting, so I appreciate it. But yeah,
That's when
no,
you
it's
know
just
we're in the
interesting.
summer.
Yeah, that
But I'm like I'm with you. The Mäkiläinen thing is interesting to me only because he doesn't have the games that we think backup goalie should have
No.
for an NHL run. And however, you just said it, his off ice, his demeanor, is everything about it says that he is ready to take the step. So I'm like, okay, well, let's see how this goes.
This is my one hot take. Like sometimes I think of myself, what would I be if I was Stephen A. Smith and I had to think about him and what I would say about the senators of all things? What would I think of? My one hot take is I'm not sure Linus Allmark's the starter next year or in 2 years from now. I'm not sure we're gonna be there. I'm not saying it's, not gonna be the case, but that will be an interesting conundrum if, even last year he dealt with injuries. He didn't play 50 games. He's never played 50 games. I think it's 49 is his most, right? And either way, even if he plays 48 games, that means Marilainen or Sogard is playing the rest. Like it's gonna be an interesting crease conundrum or kind of state of the union, I think, this year, no matter what happens, unless, everything goes to plan, which it really does.
Okay, so tell me the last time the Ottawa Senators. I feel like this is an every year conversation. The last time the Ottawa Senators had a goalie, you said that was number one. It would have to be Craig Anderson. But even at the end, people are like, well, I don't know. Ah,
Mike
right?
Condon's doing pretty well.
So, like, there was the time when Robin Leonard and Ben Bishop and Craig Anderson were all in the crease. Like, I just feel we like to do this about goaltenders and saying, oh, that guy, he's gonna knock him off or whatever. But at the end of the day, Linus Allmark
Oh.
has no, but I don't think you're crazy in that assumption. But I'm just, if it's even remotely close, then it always
Who
goes to
gets.
the guy with the bigger paycheck.
Yeah. I do find it interesting that now teams outside of like Bob or Hellebuck or Novak, like there is that tandem goaltending, right? I mean,
Right, which is more common than ever.
yeah.
So I'm not shocked if that becomes the case. And in Ottawa, it just seems like that's been the case for the last like 6 years.
How much do you think
So
about, very off topic, about Dominik Hasek getting injured and, everything that changed the course of events that year? This is very off topic, but
no,
think
but that
of.
one, like, I liked Dom. He was very good for me to deal with. He was entertaining. He was engaging. People have their thoughts on Dominik Hasek, which is fine. Like, but I don't know him differently than what he was to me. And I watched him skate, so it was funny to watch him. He'd be in full pads, but a tracksuit jacket on and a towel shoved in the neck, and he would skate with a goalie stick, no gloves, and the stick would be just like a sickle. It'd just be up in the air as he skated around, and he looked great. Like, he would stand there and make save after save, and we're like, okay, well, he's got to be ready. And every time we'd ask him, he'd be like, and that's where you hear maybe Friday every once in a while. People are like, maybe Friday. That's where that came from. We're like, are you maybe getting close? Maybe Friday. And it would be all the time he would just say this, and I'm like, if he. And I know that, like, I would love for there to be one definitive story on what happened the night in Buffalo when Phillips, Alfie, Reds, I think those are the three. I don't know if Spets was there. If those three guys went to dinner with Dom and pleaded for him to play the next day, they're like, you, and I believe Alfie says, you just have to stand there. And he's like, I can't do it. And that one, that's where it all, I think, fell apart for everybody. Like, okay, well, we can't trust this guy. He can't be on our team anymore. Because he wanted to come back, if I'm understanding
Really?
correctly. He wanted one more year, and they're like, yeah, but the guys don't want you back. Because in practice, Dominik Hasek at 80% was better than anything else there was for the Ottawa Senators. And all due respect to Ray Emery, but Hasek would just make save after save in practice. You're like, well, I don't understand why he's not ready. I did figure it out later. You know, like artists, you can look at the painting and go, well, it looks great. They're like, no. It's throw it out. It's terrible. Like, Dominik Hasek was an artist as opposed to a hockey player. Like, for him, if he wasn't completely 100%, he couldn't do it. And I do give him that bit of leeway.
Anyway,
Because he was so good. Like, I still think he's the best free agent signing for the Ottawa Senators in their history. His year, if he's not
was
hurt, I think he had the best save percentage of his career, if I'm not mistaken. It
I
was one of
will.
them. And then, like, his numbers were Vezina Trophy candidate numbers. They were so good before he got hurt. And I think if he would have been able, and they lost the year, obviously, with the lockout. If he could have stayed healthy, one, I think the team wins the Stanley Cup. And two, I think he goes to, like, he may win the Vezina.
It's not his. But it's one of his best seasons by a country mile. It might be one of his best. It's like his second best in goals against.
It
Yeah, it
was,
was.
it wasn't 179, was it?
No, it was 209 goals against 925 save percentage, 28, 10, and 4.
It was, he was so good. Oh, yeah. Anyway.
You know what's sad is that was. People might probably don't know this, but I was born in Gatineau, but my mother was a diplomat, so we lived abroad. And then I came back. First year I came back, it was the lockout year, and I remember watching Mark Methot play for the London Knights in Ottawa the year. I think both of them went to the Memorial Cup, and then the first year of the Sens was that year. And I went to like five, six games, and I was like, "Oh, this is what being an NHL fan's like." And it only lasted like 3 years, but it was fun while it lasted. But before I
Yeah,
let
but
you go,
that those
yeah.
line that line was just
Oh.
stupid good. And the fact that Alfie didn't want to be on that line all the time. That's what people
Really?
like. Alfie did not enjoy playing with Spets a lot because Spets played a different game than Alfie.
Yeah.
And so Alfie like played a lot with Mike Fisher for a bit. And I know it just Paul McClain would be like, guys, we got to win the game. So you guys are going back together. And they're like, okay, well, how many goals do you need? Like they would just go score goals. And,
That's funny.
but yeah, like I don't want to talk because Alfie's never admit, I don't think he's ever admitted to me, but I've been very sure that he's like, I don't always want to play with Jason Spezza. Well, it's just like, just certain people play different
What's
games.
Jason Spezza's legacy is on? We're just gonna go down country.
Oh, this one's a good one. So the guy that averages a point per game over 600 games, which I feel like he gave everything he had. And by the way, one of the most like top five players I would pay to watch. He was so
Yeah.
good with the puck. It was stupid. He doesn't get the recognition he deserves for how good his talent level was.
Oh.
I mean, it's tough just when you have, you know, Erik Karlsson who's won two Norrises and Daniel Alfredsson's got 1,000 points. Danny Heatley scores 250 goals. I still think he might be. He's got to be third most talented player ever to play for the Sens. He was so good. Like, and he took a lot of abuse in the city from fans. Showed up every as a captain. He came out every day. Spoke every day. Was honest. Did he ask for a trade? Yes. Do you have any other people ask for trades that you don't know about? A lot. It just happened to be it became public, which was too bad for Spets because it hurt him. But he gave everything he had to the organization, and then it just became, it just
What?
like the team stopped winning. It just wasn't fun around. Like, it hired some really bad coaches that just really sucked the
Oh,
life out of this group,
do you have any
and he
Corey
had enough.
Clouston stories? I'm kidding. I'm kidding. I'm curious, like just on that, like with Spezza, like why do you, like even when before I became a media member, like I saw Carlson, Heatley, Alfie as like kind of my childhood, like that's the players I loved watching, but I didn't
Yeah.
feel that same way. So I think also Spezza was like a byproduct of being so good, but also like the other part of his game that was so frustrating, almost like took away all the shine of how good he was.
It depends on how you wanted to watch him. And do I think it's frustrating to see the turnover at the blue line or the be behind the back pass that perhaps didn't work? Okay. You don't think Alex Ovechkin leads the league in turnovers every year? It's something ridiculous. And I know it's people are scrambling now to look it up, but I believe there have been a few years where he's led the league in turnovers. You ever go, God damn it. He's get him out of here. Like,
Yeah.
I just think you had to look at Jason Spezza's game for what it was. And he was an electrifying player. Could you now? The question is, can you win a Stanley Cup with him as your number one center? I don't know. I'm going to go with no.
Do you think they win 05, 06 if they have Hasek and he'd be their number one center?
See,
Like that.
I think you got a better chance. That's for like you, if you give me Dominic Hasek, you might be able to win 1-0, 2-1. And those games in 07 against Anaheim were close. And I think if they're like that with Ottawa, with Dominic Hasek in goal, that perhaps it's a different situation. I just wish Dominic Hasek had been able to have a run here. I like if you could have put Dominic Hasek, Danny Heatley, Jason Spezza, Daniel Alfredsson, Wade Redden, Chris Phillips, like Mike Fisher, like you had a hell of an organization. The pieces you had, and the drafting doesn't get enough attention for Ottawa because
No.
remember they were a Canadian a cash-strapped team that was bankrupt. Here they are amongst the best teams in the league, and they, you know, can't they have to pay for their hotels up front because they weren't paying their bills. Yet they
Oh
put
my
together a
God.
hell of an organization.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I feel like my mind's in
They
like
had to
four
pay for their
different places.
equipment up front. Like, yeah, there was a lot of stuff going on where it was tight.
How did it change with Melnyk? That, like, because
At first,
obviously at
like he
the
was
end it was tight,
at the
but was
yeah,
it?
at the end, it just became pennies and everything dollars, and it became really tight. But beginning, like it was fine. There were no issues. Everybody was taken care of. Like players, like he was very good to the players, and you don't have too many complaints from players about how they were treated. Just at the end, then it became contract negotiations. I think the Danny Heatley saga really soured some guys. Him threatening and suing to try to get the signing bonus back, like yeah, there was some stuff that set people off that didn't sit right. I think from that point on, it got ugly.
I'm gonna ask you. I feel like this is a good way to wrap up because I feel like we've been talking for a long time and I don't want to keep you too long. But when you look back at your career, what's like the moment that sticks out that you kind of would go back to in a heartbeat?
2012 Olympics in London will always be the highlight of my career for sure.
What did you
Because
cover?
so everything, which was the best part.
Oh.
So first I was the main TSN reporter. So we had the rights and CTV had the rights, and so we had like reporters covering each event where Farhan Lalji was doing track, so he was always at track. I was told to go wherever the biggest story of the day was. So gold medal game men's basketball, I'm there. Or
Oh my God.
I'm trying to think, like Usain Bolt running track, like I'm there. Michael Phelps and his record-setting goal, I did all of his gold medal game performances. Like in London, because it's London, so much history. Like there were bike races that were at, I don't want to call them castles, but official British royal residence, where it just like some of the stuff you just get to see was amazing. And so that'll always be the highlight. I was on the top of the O2
Really?
arena. Is that what it's called? The arena.
Yeah.
And Jamie Foxx is walking by me. And I'm with my camera guy. And he's like, that's, I'm like, I know, but I'm not gonna, he's in a hoodie. He doesn't, I'm not bugging him. But we're just in that kind of environment where there's just all kinds of stuff. I was by, I don't want to take up your time. The mall in, so from Buckingham Palace to 10 Downing Street is the big
I forgot
red
what.
strip, if you will.
Yeah. Was just
And
that?
it's closed down because the Olympics are on, and that's where the bike races are and some of the marathons and all that stuff. But I'm there shooting a stand-up and no one else is around. It's full of security. You just can't get in. And Dave Cameron, not the head coach of the Ottawa Senators, but the Prime Minister of London or England, is walking by. And so my cameraman's like, we got to interview him. I'm like, but I don't have anything to talk to him about. He's like, what? So he starts ch now. Here's a guy with a camera chasing the prime minister down. And I'm like, we're going to get shot. Like, there's no, somehow this is the end of my career. Anyway, he's like, hey. And I remember Prime Minister Cameron
Did you
is
ask
like,
him?
well, he's like, who are you with? And we're like, Canada. He's like, oh, I love Canada. So he stops. Now, they, I don't really remember what I remember asking like about the Olympics and his thoughts and just more sports oriented questions.
Yeah.
So then, because we're all in the same environment, CTV News finds out that I have this interview, but they're pissed because I didn't ask any questions about, there
About.
was something going on in the world at the time, like some, and I can't remember what it
Yeah.
was, but that I didn't ask about this, or that they've been trying for weeks to get him on camera and he wouldn't sit down. And they're like, "You sports guys." And they were just, it became a little bit, they weren't happy with me, and they made it,
That's
me
hilarious.
feel like a little person because I was just a sports guy that didn't ask the right questions. But I do remember, I have a picture of me interviewing the British Prime Minister. So
That's
that
crazy.
stuff was always pretty cool. Like Ian Mendes and I nearly got killed at the 2010 Olympics trying to watch the opening ceremonies. Long story. Anyway, we, if you ever watched, and if you go back and watch the opening ceremony, there's snowmobiles that come in over top of the scoreboard or something ridiculous. We're supposed to be right under that guy. And eventually, after they put us in this rickety scaffold and go, "You know what? You guys can't be here because the fireworks are here. You have to move." Like, so we ended up at like the 50-yard line. What? Like, it's just, anyway, we've had some of those moments together. Traveling with Ian
Funny.
Mendes was
I
always
was
an
gonna
entertainment.
say.
And we did 2012 together. We've done all kinds of stuff that's been fun. But yeah, the Olympics,
See.
like the Olympic, that the Summer Olympics is an amazing
Oh.
experience. NBC has such a big broadcast center. They have street names for however you find the corridors. Inside, they have a fully functioning Starbucks that's got signage, like it's like a Starbucks. They have a Pret-a-Manger over here, and then they had one other one that was over there. It might have been a Panera Bread, just all set up just for this. Like, it's all free just for the staff. They allowed us to use it. And so that was fantastic until some people were stuffing their backpacks, and then suddenly you couldn't bring your backpack in. But anyway,
Was that
I don't know. It might have been.
Ian? Yeah.
But that, like, yeah, the
That's
Olympics will
crazy.
always be an amazing experience.
Well, say one bad thing about Ian Mendes.
So we covered the Islanders series with Ottawa.
Was that
I don't remember what
03?
year this is. I feel like it's 03, somewhere in there. And as you know, Alex, I'm a tad bit prepared. So I
Good
know
trade.
everything that's going on. Like when we need to leave for the airport in the morning to get back, I know the route we're taking, I know how we're getting, what time it's at, whatever. I know where we're parking. And anyway, somehow Ian is with his camera guy, but I think they're in front of us as we're now heading to the airport, the four of us. So there's two cars. And all of a sudden, we're on like the Jackie Robinson Parkway. And it's like 6 in the morning, and I'm not in the mood for this. However, they take a wrong turn because I'm just following them because they say, "We got this." Now we're down off the parkway, and we're in, it doesn't seem like the nicest neighborhood. And so, like, the gas station we're at is completely, all the windows are covered, not in like in meshing. Like, it's,
Yep.
yeah. So
Tough
I get
neighborhood.
out to go over to talk to Mendez about, "Hey, like, what's going on?" He would just crack the, he cracked his window enough just to go, "What?" And I'm like, "No, like, you can't even roll your window down right now." So that's, yeah, he was no help to me whatsoever. He's like, "I don't know what's going on," and rolls his window back up. So I had to get us out of there.
That's funny.
So,
Yeah.
yeah.
I love how with Ian it's like you have to find a bad thing. That's
Yeah.
typically it's the opposite. But thanks so much for doing this, Brent. Is there anything else you wanna like at the end of the shows with any journalist? I'd let you plug your show or whatever you're doing. So
Oh.
anything you wanna.
See, I'm not even good plugging my own show on my own podcast. Like, I'm always supposed to say, like, "Hey, if you could subscribe, that'd be great. Maybe even pop in a like, that'd be." I never do it. I can't. I struggle to do it. So if you,
What makes you so uncomfortable saying like and subscribe? What's they're
I'd
just
like, if you want to, you'll do it. If you don't, you like, I
you
don't know.
should
Am I
make it
going to
like a
change your
friendly
mind by saying,
reminder.
I don't know. Are you going to subscribe because I said so? I don't know.
See, I
And
don't do it
maybe,
either, and I probably should, but I
yeah.
find it I have the same kind of angst
Yeah,
and
as long as
disgust
people
though.
still watch it and the numbers don't go backwards, I'm okay.
So what happens if you start doing really well? Do you just
I don't
I
talk
guess
to
you.
anybody ever again. I
Yeah.
don't know what that, because I don't know what the end is. Excuse me. Like I, if so, if there have been times with the Wally Mathot show that we were number one on Apple Podcasts in the summer, which is fair because it all the really one real good ones take time off. So I've gotten to where it's been number one. I'm like, that's great, but to stay there's a whole other story. Like there's no chance that I will ever get to number one. So I'm just trying to fight a losing battle, but I don't know any other way to go about it.
Brent, this was my dean. I played high school sports here in Ottawa at Lisgar, which was notoriously bad at sports. I played on the rugby and basketball team that I think as a together we went like 2 and like 25 or something like that. But there was only like 8 or 9 teams in the league. So I would just say, oh, well, it's a top 10 finish.
It's good.
Obviously, I do love the show and it's been great, but that should be the way to go
Yeah,
about it.
I'm gonna tell, like, we're top five in Ottawa. I don't even, maybe we're not. I don't even know. I don't know if I can say that. So
Where do
I'll,
you even check? I don't even. It's like
there's
Apple
no like,
or Spotify. I don't even
but
know.
app like podcasts never give out numbers, so
No.
you can't tell. And
Do
our
you?
show is more of a YouTube show. Like I think we're
Yeah.
60-40 split maybe,
In terms of
YouTube
views.
to podcast. I can't remember. I'm a TV guy. As I make the joke, like I still have some leftover makeup I use. I just like the interaction, A, of being live, having a chat, doing that stuff where you can interact with people, give away free stuff on the show. Like, and if a question comes in from a fan, like you or a viewer, you get to ask either the player or whatever. So that's that, like, if I never had a podcast side of it, I wouldn't care. Like I've only ever really paid attention to the YouTube side. I like building graphics. I like trying to find stuff that's interactive and fun. So, I don't like the copyright strikes we get when we try to play like Hammer Time music. Is it, you
That's
can't touch
elite.
this?
With
Yeah.
that must have been Graham's idea for the Hammer Time, I'm sure. Yeah.
Yeah. He's a,
I'm
he's big with
sure.
Travis Hamlik. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't, I feel like I'm, it's a losing battle. I like, I don't know about you. When I'm done a podcast, or I call it a podcast, I tend to call it a show for the most part.
I like
If you watch
both.
our show, is it's always on to the next one, and I never know how to celebrate the small wins very often. So, like, you walk away from an interview, go, that interview was great, but if people don't watch it, did you really have a great interview? So,
That's an interesting conundrum. Yeah.
If you like, Ken Hitchcock was on our show. He was amazing. Told great stories, included Jacques Martin about how they called like Steve Yzerman and the 2010 staff the Muppets, because they were the assistant coaching staff. Oh, sorry, the coaching staff called the management team Muppets. I think that's what it was. But like some great stories about, sharing a room and throwing shoes at each other because they were snoring. Like, but not enough people watched it. One, because it's not sends content, but I'm like,
Yeah.
that's a great episode.
I know.
But if you can't get people into it, then did you? So I'm just always on to the next one. I'm always trying to get the next
What was your
big show.
favorite episode on the Coming In Hot Show
I don't
podcast
have,
or
I
show?
wouldn't know. You know what,
No.
Alex? I've never watched an episode.
See, I'm the same way, and I don't know if that's a bad thing because I know people on TV that you rewatch like how you did, but
Nope. Nope, I would leave the room.
yeah, see, I think that would be my. Do you have the same thing? This is very off topic. Where maybe I'm a calmer guy, but I will say something and be like enthusiastic, and then I re-listen to it, and it sounds like I'm, under the, that someone has just like put me under the, giving me like to fall asleep or whatever that I can't think of the word. Like I just feel like oh, da, 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 da. Like I not even I thought I was excited and it sounds like I'm bored out of my mind. And I've got comments that way. So I don't know if you listen to
Yeah,
yourself and have
like
something like that too.
so I know what you're saying. For me, it was more of the opposite of why do you sound so excited when it's just not needed. So I try to be fairly even, but I do understand your point, because then people are like, well, why don't you care? And like, what are you talking about? I do. I'm just
Yeah.
not super over the top about it. So I understand your point completely. I will say the most awkward time I had, I believe it's in Detroit, and in Detroit, I think it's Mike Ba it's either Mike Babcock or Dominic Hasek, but I believe it's Babcock. In the locker room, they would have this TV. It was probably like a 60-inch, and they would do all the interviews in front of it. Well, this particular day, they had TSN on in the background, and I'm on while the scrum is on. And it was just very awkward for me. That was one of the most awkward ones.
Because
Because
they
you don't
could
know how
just hear
to,
you.
yeah, like, I don't want to hear me. I don't, yeah, no, just can you turn that off, please? The only cool one was during Cup Final.
07?
No, Tampa. That must have been the Eastern.
Chicago?
No, so the Rangers in 2012, if I'm not mistaken. Yeah, that's the lockout year. So is that 2013? 2012, 13. They used to run my pregame stories at MSG on the video screen before the game. And I was like,
Wow.
wow, there, I finally made it to MSG. So that was the big one for that was, yeah, I still
Did you
didn't watch
just?
it. I couldn't handle
I
it,
was
but
gonna
it was,
say.
yeah, I had someone else take a picture. So I was like, I can't let this is no,
You
make
should
this
like
stop.
frame it. You should have that picture just right behind the logos. Just
I have to find it. I
that's
don't know where that is now, but yeah.
funny.
Anyway.
Okay. Well, Brent, I feel like we've gone on 45 different tangents, and you've been here for a long time. So I really, really appreciate this. Again, really cool to kind of get to know you over the past year and seeing you around the rink. And I still remember, I don't know if I've told you this, but
Uh-oh.
I went to the World Juniors in 09, and I was like, I won't tell you how old I was. I was young. And your shot, I think it was like intermission or something, was like 3:18 or 3:14, like right there. And I just remember you coming out, and I'd just be like, "Ooh, what's he doing? Like, what's like that's
Yep.
Brent Wallace. That's so cool. He's only like 20 meters away from me." So now we're
Never
farther,
understood that.
but closer on virtual. But
I've never got super comfortable with like, I don't even like to use celebrity. I like we're talking D-list celebrity here at best. Is it's just me. Like I don't know any different. And so people are like, oh my God. I'm like, I'm just the same as you are for the most part. So
I
that
know.
one was always a
Like,
bit awkward for me.
I had Julian and Graham always tease. I've had like three moments this year, and I went to a development camp just like 3 days ago, and I'm walking up those stairs, the ones to get to the top, and someone turns and says, "Oh my God, is that Alex Adams?" And I went like, "What
It's
the
weird.
f-?" It's so weird.
Yeah.
It's like,
Yeah.
and I said hi and talked to him. He was nice, but I was just like, "This is." I don't like whatever that is. I don't like it, but it's so weird.
Yeah. Like I was in Pittsburgh one time calling room service. I was at the Marriott, which is across the street from the PPG Paints or I don't Console Energy Center. I don't know what it's called anymore. I'm pretty sure it may have been the Igloo back then when I was covering it. Anyway. They're like, hey, Mr. Wallace, we watch you all. I love your stuff. I watch it all the time on the NHL Network. Because back then they used to air our stuff on the NHL Network. And I was like, yep, this is the weirdest one so far. I've never had someone on the phone tell me they like my stuff, especially in the US. So there's been a few of those moments.
That's a weird one. I did get nervous seeing you around the rink, so I guess
You
I'll
only got
add that
nervous
to
because you thought
the.
I was going to yell at you. Let's be honest.
Oh, it's a bit of both. Anyways, Brett, I really appreciate you taking the time. Everyone, like and subscribe to the Coming in Hot podcast. I'll do your job for you, and
Appreciate
I'll
it.
see. Enjoy the summer, and I'll see you around the rink in the fall.
See you, Alex. Thanks, man.